So, the night sky for April 2010. Well, obviously the nights are getting shorter, but after sunset, if you look to the south, you'll see the very nice constellation of Leo the Lion, one that really looks a little bit like what it says. I think of the lions in Trafalgar Square on their haunches. Up to the right of that is Gemini, with the bright stars Castor above and Pollux below. Below that, you might see a single bright star. It's Procyon, really what the only bright star in Canis Minor. Between Gemini and Leo is the little constellation, very faint, of Cancer. It has a very nice little cluster at its heart called the Beehive Cluster. And we'll come back to that during the highlights, because, in fact, that's where Mars is at the present time. Down to the left of Leo is the constellation of Virgo with its bright star Spica. Nothing very obvious to see there unless you have a telescope or very high power binoculars, because between the back legs or tail of Leo and Spica in Virgo is a region of the sky we call the realm of the galaxies. We're looking towards what's called the Virgo cluster of galaxies. It's the largest cluster, perhaps 2,000 members in our immediate vicinity. And there are many bright galaxies there, along with many, many fainter ones. So it's a nice region to explore with a reasonable-sized telescope, but on a particularly dark, clear night with no moon. I think you couldn't fail to spot, rising in the east, a very bright star called Arcturus in the constellation of Bootes. You might just spot a little circlet of stars to the lower left. It's called Corona Borealis, the Northern Crown. Borealis means northern, the same way we have the Aurora Borealis, the northern lights. And then we have the constellation of Hercules that will rise up later during the night. If with binoculars you move from the lower right star of the central keystone of Hercules, move up towards the upper right star, you should come across a little fuzzy object. And that's a rather lovely globular cluster called M13. It's the brightest we have in our northern hemisphere. These are all little micro-galaxies, maybe a million stars in a spherical distribution, that we think were formed at about the time of the formation of our galaxy. They form a spherical distribution, and it was in fact Howard Shapley a long time ago that realized the center of that distribution ought to be the center of our Milky Way galaxy. And hence he was able to work out how far away our sun was, about 27,000 light years from the center, even though optically you cannot see the center. And finally, if you stay up later at night, that wonderful region of sky, Cygnus the Swan, Lyra the Lyre, and Aquila the Eagle will be rising. Their three brightest stars, Deneb, Vega, and Altair, forming what is called the Summer Triangle. If you take binoculars and you move from Altair up to the right towards Lyra, about a third of the way, there's a rather dark region in the Milky Way. It's called the Cygnus Rift. And in there, you might just see an upside-down coat hanger. It's actually formally called Brocky's Cluster, but most people call it the coat hanger because it looks just like a little coat hanger. A nice little thing to spot. So there we go. That's some of the stars you can look out for during April. What about the planets? Well, let's start with the king of the planets, Jupiter. It passed behind the sun on the 28th of February, and so in April it's just sort of reappearing in the pre-dawn sky. In fact, on the 1st of April it rises about 50 minutes before the sun, and with a magnitude of -2, that's quite bright, you could pick it up in the morning in the sun's glare, given a clear, low eastern horizon. So obviously during the month it gradually rises earlier, and in fact by month's end, about 2 hours before the sun. But to be frank, it's best to wait a month or so to see it better. Well, Saturn was in opposition March the 21st, 22nd, the beginning of spring, not that we seem to have had a spring yet this year. So it's easily seen in the southeast after sunset, lying to the lower left of Leo the Lion. It can thus be seen for much of the night, magnitude about +0.6, rising a little bit to +0.8, which actually means, of course, it's getting slightly fainter as it moves away from us. The angular size is about 19 arc seconds. The rings extend about 43 arc seconds, which is about the same angular size as Jupiter. But the ring system is still very close to edge on, and they appear very thin. In fact, due to the difference between the orbital inclinations of Saturn and the Earth, the tilt is actually reducing at the moment. It starts April with a tilt of about 3 degrees, and in late May, that's reduced to about 1.7 degrees. At that point, the rings start opening out again, and gradually over the next year or so, we'll see them more easily. Given a small telescope, you should easily spot Saturn's largest satellite, Titan, which has a magnitude of 7.8. If you have a bigger telescope, there's a good chance you'll pick out several more. Well, Mercury. It appeared in the twilight sky along with Venus during the last month of March, and in the first 2 weeks of April can be spotted with binoculars about 30 minutes after sunset, just to the upper left of where the sun has set. But I'll come back to that as a highlight of this month. Well, Mars has been perhaps the nicest planet to observe in the last couple of months or so. It still remains prominent and high in the sky after sunset. As I mentioned earlier, it's in Cancer. It's resumed its eastward track across the skies towards Leo. But as it gets further away from us, then the angular size drops from 9 to 7 arc seconds. So it'll be very hard to see many details on the surface. Well, Venus is now becoming quite prominent in the evening sky after sunset. In fact, I observed it over in the west from the south coast of the UK only last week, looking really, really quite bright. It's magnitude minus 3.9, so it's easily spotted, the brightest object in the sky after the moon. So look towards the southwest, perhaps half an hour after sunset. It only has an angular size at the moment of 11 arc seconds. A telescope, it looked like a well-illuminated disk. In fact, it was this observation that Venus was able to show full phases that proved that at some times Venus must be on the far side of the Sun and hence orbited the Sun. And these observations by Galileo essentially showed that the Ptolemaic ideas were wrong and the Copernican idea was right. Venus tends to keep a pretty constant magnitude, about minus 4. And even though its angular size varies quite a bit, of course, as it gets nearer, the overall angular size is bigger, but less of it is illuminated. It turns out that the amount of reflective area, apparently, stays pretty constant, and that keeps the brightness pretty well the same, no matter when you see it, as it appears either after sunset or before dawn. So finally, let's look at one or two of the highlights of the month. I've mentioned that both Venus and Mercury are visible after sunset, and in fact you see them quite close together in the western sky, given a low westerly horizon. Until the 7th of April, the first week, both are moving away from the sun, so getting higher in the sky after sunset. But from the 8th of April, Mercury begins to move back towards the sun. In fact, by the 21st of this month, Mercury will be almost impossible to see. Their closest approach, at about 3 degrees, occurs on April the 4th. So that should be a very, very nice thing to look out for. And if you can still see Mercury on the 15th of April, it's just below a very thin, one-day-old crescent moon. You'd need a very good, clear, low western horizon to spot this, but it would be well worth having a try. As I mentioned earlier, Mars is now in Cancer, and on the 16th to 18th of April, it passes the Beehive Cluster. That should be a very nice sight with binoculars. In fact, as it moves away to the upper left of M44, the other name for the Beehive Cluster, they're joined by the first quarter moon on the 21st of April. And finally, we do have a meteor shower this month. It's called the Lyrids. And you might spot the Lyrid meteors on the early morning of the 23rd of April. It's a reliable but not particularly spectacular shower, and typically one only sees about 15 meteors per hour, which isn't an awful lot more than the typical sort of background count you might find from what are called sporadic meteors. This year, however, the peak of activity is just before new moon, so there's a very thin crescent waning moon in the sky, but it really shouldn't affect the observations. The dust particles that cause this shower were released by a comet called Thatcher, but not, of course, Margaret Thatcher, which was discovered in 1861. Occasionally, we pass through a dense clump of the particles released by this comet. That actually happened in 1982. And then over 90 meters per hour was seen. So you never quite know. You might get something spectacular. 1 to 2 a.m. on the morning of the 23rd of April is about the time to look. And essentially look east, up, you'll find Vega and Lyra. And probably look a bit higher in the sky. You don't want to look right at the radiant. Look perhaps 45 degrees away from it to have the best chance of seeing the meteors. I do hope you're lucky.